All right, so you brought this research paper, Obesity and Cancer, a current overview of epidemiology, pathogenesis, outcomes, and management. And I gotta say, this is something that I think a lot of people are thinking about these days, how these two things, these two big health challenges are connected.
Yeah, for sure. It's a big one. It's a complex relationship. And this paper does a good job of kind of not just the numbers of obesity and cancer, but the why and the how and kind of what we can do about it.
Right, because I think when people hear like, "Oh, obesity, is a risk for cancer," it's easy to just go, "Oh, well, I don't even know what to do with that
Right,
information."
exactly. And this paper really, I think, emphasizes that knowledge is power, you
Right.
know. But I think before we get into all the nitty-gritty, like, we got to start with some like basics here. Like, what do we mean when we say, you know, obesity?
Right, because it's like we throw that word around and it's more than just overweight, right? It's like an actual definition. What does the World Health Organization actually say?
So they define it as abnormal or excessive fat accumulation to the extent that health may be impaired. And that last part is really, really important. You know, it's about your health. It's not just about, you know, how you look or anything like that.
Right, and it makes me think about how we typically measure it too, right? Which is BMI, that body mass index. Is that really the best way to assess this, though?
I mean, BMI is definitely a good starting point. It's, you know, quick, easy. Most people are kind of familiar with it. But, you know, this paper gets into some kind of alternative technologies that kind of paint maybe a little bit more of a detailed picture.
Oh, like what? Give me the rundown.
So like the DXA scans. So it uses X-rays to measure bone density, body composition.
Okay.
There's ultrasound, even MRI in some cases. And you know, these methods can differentiate between different types of fat, which is something that BMI can't really do.
Right. So it's like getting the higher definition picture versus the kind of blurry one. But why does that matter? Is some fat worse than others?
You hit the nail on the head.
Okay.
You know, we really got to kind of make that distinction between what we call visceral fat and subcutaneous fat.
Okay.
Visceral fat is the stuff that kind of accumulates around your organs.
Oh, like deep inside.
Yeah, deep inside, exactly. And it's considered more kind of metabolically active, I guess we could say, and ultimately more harmful than subcutaneous fat, which is the fat that's right under your skin.
So that's the belly fat we always hear about.
That's the troublemaker right there.
Got it. Okay.
And this is where that concept of metabolic syndrome comes in.
Oh, okay. What is that? And how does that all connect?
So think of metabolic syndrome kind of as a cluster of, I guess, red flags, you know, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, unhealthy cholesterol levels, and like we just talked about, excess belly fat.
Right.
And having three or more of these factors significantly increases your risk for some, you know, serious health problems like heart disease, stroke, and certain cancers.
And this paper suggests that obesity is very closely linked to developing metabolic syndrome. So it's like this domino effect almost.
So obesity can increase your risk for metabolic syndrome. And then both independently and kind of, you know, together, they both raise the risk for certain cancers.
Right.
So it's kind of this chain reaction that you just don't want to, you know,
Don't want to start.
you don't want to start
And we're not just talking about a small increase in risk here. I mean, this paper brought up some like pretty shocking statistics about just how common obesity is globally. It's a big deal.
It is. And I mean, it really is a global health crisis. I mean, they're predicting that by 2025, over 1 billion adults worldwide will be obese. And then by 2030, almost 40% of the world's adult population will be either overweight or obese.
Wow, those are like
It's a lot.
really big numbers. I mean, I knew it was a growing issue, but that's a huge chunk of the population. It makes you really stop and think about like the impact of our lifestyles and everything.
It really does. It's definitely a wake-up call for everyone, you know. I mean, but it also just emphasizes why this research is so important, you know, because if we understand kind of this link between obesity and cancer, then that could potentially, you know, help turn the tide on this whole thing.
Right, because it's not about fitting into a certain size. It's about, like, protecting your health.
Exactly.
Really, at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the how and the why. How can obesity actually cause cancer?
Yeah. That is the million-dollar question, right?
Right.
And that's what makes this research so important, is kind of, you know, delving into those mechanisms.
Yeah, it is wild to think that, like, something like, you know, excess weight could have such a, like, a deep impact, I guess, on our, like, our inner workings.
Yeah.
It's like setting off this chain reaction that we're just beginning to understand.
Right. It's complex. There's a lot of interplay. But this paper kind of highlights three sort of main mechanisms that they're looking at in terms of, like, how obesity is actually maybe, you know, causing cancer to develop.
Okay. Well, let's break those down.
Go ahead.
What's the first way that obesity might be kind of tipping the scales towards cancer?
So the first one centers around adipose tissue. So that's your body fat acting almost like a hormone factory, churning out excess estrogen.
Wait, estrogen? I thought that was like a female hormone mainly.
Well,
what's going on there?
So you're right. I mean, estrogen is key for, you know, for women, but men have it too, just in smaller amounts. But the issue is that, you know, adipose tissue, it contains an enzyme called aromatase.
Gosh.
And aromatase, its job is to convert androgens, so those are male hormones, present in both sexes, into estrogen.
Okay, so more fat, more aromatase, more estrogen.
Exactly.
Even in men.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. Because,
well, because, you know, having all this extra estrogen floating around can actually kind of, you know, fuel the growth of certain types of cancer, especially hormone-dependent ones.
Oh.
So, you know, think breast cancer, endometrial cancer, even ovarian cancer.
Gotcha. Okay, so that's mechanism number one, I guess.
Right.
What's the second way that obesity might be linked to cancer?
So the second one revolves around a hormone that I'm sure, you know, many people have heard of, insulin.
Right, insulin.
Yeah.
Helps our bodies regulate blood sugar.
Right. But how does that play into, like, cancer risk?
Right. So obesity can lead to something called insulin resistance.
Okay.
Where your cells don't respond to insulin as well as they should.
Mm.
So to compensate, your pancreas just pumps out even more insulin, leading to chronically high levels in your blood.
Yeah.
And we call that hyperinsulinemia.
So it's like our bodies are kind of stuck in overdrive trying to keep up. Exactly. That's a great way to put it. And the problem is that, you know, insulin isn't just regulating blood sugar.
Right.
It also has these kind of growth promoting effects.
Okay.
And so chronically high levels of insulin can actually encourage the development and progression of certain cancers. So we're talking about colon, kidney, prostate, endometrial cancers.
Wow. It's amazing how our bodies can kind of work against us sometimes.
I know. Right.
Okay. So we've got, like, the excess estrogen, we've got too much insulin.
Right.
Both potentially driven by obesity.
Yeah.
What's the third mechanism that this paper highlights?
So the third one is a biggie, and it's one that's implicated in a whole host of kind of chronic diseases, and that's chronic inflammation.
Right.
Remember how we talked about visceral fat being kind of metabolically active? Well, it doesn't just sit there quietly.
Right.
It's constantly releasing these inflammatory molecules into your system.
Oh, so it's like having this, like, low-grade alarm bell kind of going off.
Yes.
Inside your body all the time.
Yes, yes.
And eventually that takes its toll.
Exactly. That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
And over time, you know, that chronic inflammation can actually damage DNA, and that creates a really fertile environment for cancer cells to kind of, you know, set up shop and thrive.
So we've got estrogen, insulin, inflammation, all potentially triggered or worsened by obesity.
Yeah.
And all potentially kind of fueling cancer development.
Exactly.
That's pretty sobering stuff.
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, you know, the research is pretty clear in terms of, like, which cancers are most strongly linked to obesity.
Let's hear it then. Like, what are the cancers that we should be kind of most concerned about?
So the big ones are postmenopausal breast cancer, colorectal cancer, endometrial cancer, kidney cancer, esophageal cancer, pancreatic cancer, liver cancer, and gallbladder cancer.
It's a long list.
It is a long list.
Wow. And to think this paper mentioned that, like, Obesity might be responsible for a significant percentage of all cancers globally.
Yeah, a shocking 4 to 8% to be precise.
That's huge.
That's a huge number of potential preventable cancers, you know?
Right, right.
And I think it just really, really, you know, emphasizes how important it is that we address this, you know?
Absolutely. It's not just about fitting into a certain size. It's about, like, protecting your health, for real.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, you mentioned breast cancer earlier when we were talking about the estrogen. Right. And this paper touched on this kind of interesting thing where it seems like there's a difference between pre and postmenopausal women.
Yes.
When it comes to obesity and breast cancer risk.
That's a great point. And it's actually a really fascinating area of research.
Yeah.
You see, before menopause, estrogen is primarily produced by the ovaries.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, you know, having higher levels of body fat can actually be slightly protective against breast cancer in some premenopausal women.
Wait, really?
Yeah, no, it seems kind of counterintuitive.
So being overweight could actually be beneficial.
Yeah, that's what some of the research is suggesting. It's not fully understood why.
Wow.
But it might have to do with how fat tissue can sometimes kind of buffer estrogen levels, you know? But here's the thing. After menopause, the ovaries stop producing estrogen.
Right.
And guess what? Becomes the primary source.
Fat tissue.
Exactly.
Oh, so that's when the tables turn.
Exactly. Exactly. So in postmenopausal women, higher body fat, and especially the kind that accumulates around the trunk, is strongly linked to an increased risk of breast cancer. And it's likely because of that excess estrogen production that we were talking about.
So it's not just about being obese. It's about, like, where you carry that weight, too.
Exactly.
That's really important information, especially for, you know, women to know as they're, like, going through different stages of life.
Absolutely. And it just highlights, again, you know, how important it is to really have these open and honest conversations with your healthcare provider.
Because they can help you understand your individual risk factors and really make, you know, informed decisions about your health.
Right, right. But let's not forget, like, this whole deep dive isn't just about, like, getting cancer in the first place.
Right.
This paper also gets into what happens after a diagnosis.
Yeah.
And the news isn't great.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of the difficult reality. It's not just that obesity increases your risk of developing cancer, but it can also make it harder to beat the disease once you have it.
It's one thing to, you know, think about it maybe making you more likely to get cancer, but to think that it could, like, actually affect your chances of survival, too.
Yeah.
That's a whole other level.
It is, yeah. It's a difficult reality, but this paper, you know, really dives into those tough conversations and kind of highlights how obesity can sort of create this cascade of challenges for cancer patients, impacting everything from, like, their treatment options to their long-term outcomes.
So where do we even begin? Like, what are some of the ways that obesity can negatively impact cancer outcomes?
Well, I think, you know, one of the most significant findings is this link between obesity and cancer recurrence.
Okay.
You know, the research shows that for certain cancers, being obese can significantly increase the chances of the cancer coming back even after treatment.
That's got to be a huge blow.
Yeah.
For people, like, physically and emotionally. Yeah. Are we talking about all types of cancer here?
It seems to vary depending on the specific type of cancer. For instance, the paper cites studies showing that obese patients with colorectal cancer have up to a 40% higher risk of recurrence.
40%. Wow.
Yeah, that's a significant difference.
That's a scary thought.
Yeah.
And I imagine that weighs heavily on, you know, people's minds during treatment and after.
Absolutely, yeah. And unfortunately, you know, the news doesn't get much better. You know, for certain cancers, obesity has also been linked to lower overall survival rates. So statistically, this means that, you know, obese individuals may have a shorter life expectancy after a cancer diagnosis.
This is heavy stuff, but I think it's important information to have because it underscores, I think, how important it is to, like, really take this seriously and to address it.
Yeah.
Not just for prevention, but,
yeah,
like, if you are facing cancer, this could really impact your outcomes.
Absolutely. And it's not just about recurrence and survival rates either. You know, obesity can also make the actual cancer treatments themselves riskier and potentially less effective.
Oh, okay. Can you give me some specific examples? What did the paper say?
Yeah, so let's start with surgery. So obese patients often face a greater risk of complications from surgery, Things like infections, slower healing times, increased blood loss.
That makes sense. I mean, surgery's already so hard on your body.
Exactly.
Even under the best of circumstances.
Right. And then radiation therapy can be really challenging as well.
Okay.
For obese patients, it can be harder to accurately target the tumor with the radiation.
Right.
And there's a higher risk of radiation damage to the surrounding healthy tissues.
Gosh, it's like every step of the journey just becomes that much more
Yeah, I get
complicated.
it. And then there's the issue of chemotherapy.
Okay.
So this paper talks about something called dose capping, which is really kind of
Okay,
concerning.
dose capping. I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah.
What is that?
So essentially, it means that obese patients might actually receive lower doses of chemotherapy drugs than their body weight would normally allow for.
Oh, wow.
And this is often done, out of concern that standard doses could lead to more severe side effects, which is understandable.
Right, so it's like they're being penalized for their weight, even when it comes to like this life-saving treatment.
That's how some people see it.
Yeah.
It's a very complex issue, and there are no easy answers. On the one hand, of course, doctors want to minimize those side effects.
Of course.
But on the other hand, lower doses of chemo might not be as effective at actually killing the cancer cells, which could lead to, poorer outcomes down the line.
Right. It's a
Yeah.
really hard balance to strike.
It really is, and I think it just highlights a really crucial point.
Yeah.
When it comes to cancer treatment, this one-size-fits-all approach, it doesn't work.
Right.
Especially for, obese patients, individualized care is absolutely crucial.
It makes you wonder, like, are these conversations that doctors are having, like, openly with their patients?
I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
Because I think awareness is the first step towards change, right? And patients really need to feel empowered to ask questions and to advocate for themselves.
Right. It's their body. It's their health.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's ultimately their life on the line.
Exactly.
This has been such an informative deep dive.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, I don't know, it's a lot to take in.
Yeah.
And I imagine it would be easy to feel kind of overwhelmed or even like a little hopeless after hearing all of this. But I want to be clear, like, that's not the goal here, to like scare people or to make them feel like there's nothing they can do.
Right.
What would you say, like, what's the most important takeaway for people listening who might be feeling that way?
You're absolutely right. I think this paper is not meant to instill fear at all, but really to empower people with knowledge. It's about understanding the risks so that you can take proactive steps to protect your health. And thankfully, it doesn't just sort of outline the problems, but it also, offers some potential solutions and management strategies.
Right. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about those then. What can people actually do, to reduce their risk and potentially improve their outcomes if they are, facing cancer? What does the paper say is a good starting point?
Well, I think the paper is very clear when it comes to managing obesity, especially for cancer survivors. It's not about, quick fixes or fad diets or magic pills. It really is about making sustainable lifestyle changes.
Music to my ears, no crazy juice cleanses,
Oh.
starvation diets.
No, none of that.
Okay, good.
The research overwhelmingly supports this sort of two-pronged approach.
Okay.
A healthy diet and regular exercise, and of course, ideally combined with some behavioral therapy to really kind of provide that support and guidance along the way.
Okay, let's break it down,
Okay.
starting with diet.
Yeah.
What kind of dietary changes are we talking about?
So, the paper doesn't necessarily endorse any like specific diet, because what works best really can vary from person to person.
Right.
But ultimately, it really does come down to creating a calorie deficit.
Okay.
So consistently burning more calories than you're consuming.
Right, that calorie equation, it's always a juggling act, it feels like.
It is, but it sounds simple,
Right.
but it does take effort and planning. But I think again, it's more about making those sustainable changes, not necessarily like, overhauling your entire life.
Right. So no crazy restrictions, just kind of
It's
making healthier choices overall.
exactly. So focusing on, whole unprocessed foods, plenty of fruits and vegetables, lean protein, whole grains, and then obviously, limiting those processed foods, sugary drinks, unhealthy fats, all that good stuff.
Yeah. What about exercise?
Yeah.
Are we talking like marathon training here, or like what kind of exercise is best?
you don't need to become an athlete overnight.
Yeah.
You know, the paper really emphasizes the benefits of regular aerobic exercise.
Uh-huh.
So think, you know, brisk walking, swimming, cycling, anything that gets your heart rate up and that you can stick with consistently.
Totally. And you don't need a gym membership or like fancy equipment for any of that.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Even 30 minutes of moderate intensity exercise, you know, most days of the week can make a really big difference.
Okay.
And even if you can't manage a full 30 minutes, you know, just getting up and moving for a few minutes throughout the day is better than nothing.
Right. Every little bit. Every little bit counts.
Counts, yeah. And don't we also want to like throw in some strength training?
Absolutely.
It's a good measure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Building muscle can boost your metabolism, which can have a positive impact on your weight. And plus, it's great for bone health, mm-hmm. which is especially important, you know, for people who are going through, you know, cancer treatment and things like that. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay. So we've got diet, we've got exercise, all good things like we know we should be doing anyway.
Right.
But you also mentioned behavioral therapy as part of this. And I think that's such an important piece that often gets overlooked.
Yeah.
Like, how can that help?
So behavioral therapy is a fantastic tool for long-term weight management. You know, it can really help you identify and modify those kind of unhealthy habits that might be, you know, contributing to weight gain.
Okay, like what?
So things like, you know, emotional eating or mindless snacking, things like that. So it's really kind of, you know, it's like having a coach in your corner, helping you stay motivated, accountable.
Right, stay on track.
Stay on track, exactly. And it can also, you know, really help address kind of the psychological aspects of weight management.
Yeah, because, you know, let's face it, changing, you know, deeply ingrained habits is just as much a mental challenge as it is a physical one.
For sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we've got diet, exercise, behavioral therapy kind of all like working together.
Yeah.
This paper seems to really emphasize this like holistic approach.
It does, absolutely.
To weight management.
It does.
And you know, I know that for some people, especially those who have, you know, struggled with obesity for a long time maybe or have certain, you know, medical conditions, you know, medications for weight loss might be an option.
Right.
As well as, you know, things like bariatric surgery. But I imagine those are very individualized conversations to have. They are. And those decisions, you know, should always be made in consultation with a healthcare professional. And they can really, you know, help you weigh the potential benefits and risks based on your own personal health history.
This has been such a fantastic deep dive. Thank you for breaking it all down with me.
My pleasure. It's been fun.
And to our listeners, we hope this conversation has been you know, helpful and informative. And if you have questions, you know, definitely talk to your healthcare provider about the best ways to stay healthy and to manage your weight. Until next time.